So welcome everybody. Today we're very happy to have Bruno Baltazar from the University of Chicago, and he will talk about 2D type zero B-string theory. Please keep your microphones muted and only unmute if you want to ask him questions. Bruno, the stage is yours.
Okay, thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me to speak here. Yeah, I'll be talking about this recent work on a two-dimensional type zero B-string theory. This is based on a work that appeared in January with Victor Rodriguez and Sheehan, and some more work in progress that will appear hopefully later this week. So, you know, this word seem a bit, maybe a bit unfamiliar, but this is perhaps one of the oldest examples of a holographic duality, which is that between a two-dimensional string theory and its dual, which is a matrix quantum mechanics. And this matrix quantum mechanics is a very simple system that I'll review shortly. And this makes this duality to be a useful toy model in which you can test new ideas in string theory and of the worksheet formalism in general. So for example, one of the ideas that it has been fruitful to explore in this context are non-perturbative effects in string theory, which are mediated by the so-called D instantons. Okay, so these go outside the usual string perturbation theory that you learn about in standard string theory textbooks, and allows you to compute some new contributions to amplitudes. Some other interesting things you can play around with and test in the setting are time-dependent backgrounds. It is known that there are some D-brains in this theory that have time dependence, and that allows you to compute sort of, for example, also the observables are scattering amplitudes, but now in a time-dependent setting. So you can try to extend the usual formalism of worksheet string theory to such setups. And finally, another idea that I'd like to mention are string dualities. So we're all familiar with this picture of this web of dualities in 10-dimensional critical string theory. Kind of looks like this. And then at each corner, you have some different weakly coupled string theory. And there's a similar picture here in this two-dimensional setting. So in one corner, you might have type 0b, which is the one I'm going to talk about today. But we also know there exists the so-called type 0a. There's the so-called heterotic SO23. And presumably other ones as well. And some of these are have a dual matrix quantum mechanics, such as these two. And they're related by T-duality, for example. But it'd be nice to understand how all these different string theories are connected, how their duals are connected, which would provide a kind of a quantum mechanics landscape, if you want, of the system. So it'd be nice to explore this further. Okay, so with these words of motivation, I just want to describe what's going to be the plan for the talk today. So first, I'll start by revisiting the string theory, this type 0b string theory, and computing perturbative amplitudes. So this is in particular the work that appeared in this first paper that I described above. Then I'll talk about the dual matrix quantum mechanics, review what it is, and how these computations are done in the dual side. And finally, I'm going to talk about non-perturbative scattering amplitudes in this string theory. So in particular, if you want, it's like the first of these ideas that I mentioned up here. Okay, and unless there are any questions about these words of motivation, I'll move on to start describing the string theory of type 0b. Okay, so the worksheet CFT consists of a free boson together with its super partner, which is a fermion psi zero. So this has central charge 3/2. Then you have a n equals 1 super Liouville CFT with central charge 27/2. And then you have the usual BC beta gamma ghosts, sorry, the ghosts, with central charge minus 15. So in total, you have central charge 0, which is the usual condition that you need to have a good violin variant string background. Now, this free boson x0, you can think of it as the time direction of your target space. And the Liouville, you can describe it in terms of a bosonic field phi and the super partner fermion psi. So together, this x0 and phi describe your 1 plus 1 target space dimension. Okay. Probably the most unfamiliar piece of the CFT is the Liouville. So I wrote here the semi-class collection for the bosonic part, then you can complete it supersymmetrically. So there are these parameters Q and B that appear here, but they're completely fixed in terms of the central charge. So for us, they take these values. Okay, but perhaps this background looks a bit unfamiliar, so let me describe what each term here means. So the first term is just the usual kinetic term for a free boson, of course. Then the second term here, that's called a linear dilaton term. And it's saying that your string coupling, it varies with space. Okay, so there's an effective string coupling, which essentially goes exponentially with phi. So at large positive phi, the theory is strongly coupled here. And at large negative phi, the theory is weakly coupled. Okay. Now, you might think that the theory is not very well defined then because of the strong coupling region, but you know, Liouville is smart enough that it cuts off the strong coupling region because it has this interacting term that's exponential in phi. So if you want, there's like a potential that's exponential in phi, and it essentially prevents the field from accessing the strong coupling region. So most of the dynamics is localized in the weak coupling region, or at least in some region where the string coupling is finite. So in other words, it's not a translation invariant background, okay? Okay, so what are the closed strings then? This is a n equals one supersymmetric Rothschild CFT. So there are, as usual, NS, NS, and Ramon-Ramon sectors. In the NS, NS, you have the so-called tachyon. So it's labeled by an energy omega, which is a positive number, positive real number. And you can have an ingoing or an outgoing closed string. There are the usual GS and ghost factors that appear in this vertex operator. There's an exponential in the free boson x0, which again just denotes whether the closed string is ingoing or outgoing. And finally, there's a contribution from the Liouville CFT, which by the on-shell condition is fixed to also depend only on omega. And asymptotically, where the theory is weakly coupled, this looks essentially like an ingoing and an outgoing wave. So the closed string has an asymptotic behavior that looks like the following. You have this exponential in x0, and then you have a term that looks like an ingoing wave, and then there's a term that's there's a reflection coefficient times an outgoing wave. Okay, what is reflection coefficient? Is just the reflection of this wall up here. Okay, it's just what you get. Okay, so this is the NS-NS sector. It's the only physical string state in the NS-NS sector. It's called a tachyon, but it's actually massless. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the Ramon-Ramon sector. There's also a physical string state there. You also have the same factor. Then you have this contribution from whether it's an ingoing or outgoing closed string. And now you have an operator in the Ramon-Ramon sector of Liouville. And this looks very similar to the one above in the weak coupling region, I, x0, except that now you have some contribution also from the spin fields, okay? Plus minus tilde. There's some different reflection coefficient that's in the Ramon sector. Okay. And these are spin fields for the psi zero, so the free fermion of the free boson and also of loop. Okay. So these ones are also massless. And together they describe all the physical string states of type zero B. So it's a very simple theory. Okay, there's no tower of string states, it's just two massless degrees of freedom. In particular, they're both bosons. So there's no, even though there's supersymmetry on the world sheet, there's no supersymmetry in space-time. Okay, now we can go on and compute some observables, some scattering amplitudes. So for example, the simplest scattering amplitude is the sphere 3-point. So we can consider, for example, a 1-2 scattering amplitude. In this case, I'm considering the scattering amplitude of 3 tachyons. So there's an ingoing tachyon here. Recall the plus denotes ingoing. And then there's 2 outgoing tachyons, T omega 1 minus and T omega 2 minus. There's an overall factor of GS. The free boson just gives you a delta function that imposes energy conservation. And all the non-trivial contribution comes from the Liouville 3-point function. Okay. These structure constants were computed, in particular in this paper by Fukuda and Hosomichi in 2002. And you know, they're known expressions, they look very horrible, but it turns out that something very nice happens once you impose the energy conservation condition, and this expression just simplifies to omega, omega 1, omega 2. Okay, so there's some kind of like magic that happens here. Once you impose this energy conservation, that's completely obscure from the worldsheet formalism, but it hints to the sort of like, there's a simple underlying description of all this, which of course we now know is the dual matrix quantum mechanics. Okay, so that was kind of nice, but it was also a bit simple. So maybe we should try to compute something more complicated, such as this sphere 4-point scattering amplitude or a 1-3 scattering amplitude. So in this case, I have 3 outgoing closed strings here. And of course, now I need to integrate over the position of one of these closed strings. And the difficult computation, which is the Liouville 4-point function, I have to decompose into a sum over structure constants together with the Virasoro conformal block. So it's given by this expression. Okay, so this Virasoro conformal block encodes all the contributions of super Virasoro descendants of a given Liouville primary. These two structure constants, again, are known. So the difficult part is essentially computing this super Virasoro block. And the way we do this is actually numerically. So we have to use some so-called Zamolodchikov recursion relations, in particular for super Virasoro algebra. And these were derived in these papers by Belovan and others, and also in a series of work by Suchanek and others. So this gives a recursive way to compute this Virasoro conformal blocks that's numerical. But at the end of the day, you get an answer. Once you know that, you know, this conformal blocks are converging. And then you can do the integration over the intermediate state and over the modulus, and you get the answer for the final scattering amplitude. So you do this for a series of energies and you get, you know, a set of points. And lo and behold, the answer turns out to match exactly with this formula here. Okay, so this is the A 1-3, which again is a very simple polynomial in the energies. And again, it just points to this kind of simpler description of the system. That you know, it's not at all clear from this worldsheet formalism where you have to do a bunch of integrals and have this complicated Virasoro conformal blocks. But at the end of the day, the answer simplifies. Okay, so that's all, you know, the usual string formalism to compute perturbative scattering amplitudes. And now I want to move on to describe what's the dual matrix model of this, where all this hidden structure emerges. Okay, so yeah, so what's the dual matrix quantum mechanics? Well, we start with a large number, capital N, of non-relativistic, non-interacting fermions, all moving in a Hamiltonian, which is quadratic, but the potential is an inverted quadratic Hamiltonian. The fermions you can think of as the eigenvalues of the matrix. But they're all free, they're not interacting. So the energy eigenstates, there's a twofold degeneracy of the energy eigenstates. You can think of it as like one basis, for example, is labeled by the energy eigenvalue, and then left and right, where this subscript left and right denotes whether there's an incoming wave coming from the right or from the left. So for example, the one that I drew here is the E sub R. So there's an incoming wave like this. There's a reflection, reflected wave, and there's a transmitted wave. Okay, so that's those are the kind of energy eigenstates that you get for each fermion. And you can solve this exactly because it's a quadratic Hamiltonian. Okay, but to get the type 0b string theory, you have to take a large n limit. Okay, so we're gonna send the total number of fermions to infinity, but we're gonna hold the Fermi energy fixed. So the idea is that, you know, this parameter minus mu is held fixed, it's the Fermi energy. So you essentially are going to occupy all the energy eigenstates with energies below this. Okay, so in other words, this is dual to the closed string vacuum. Okay, so now we can start mapping parameters on the two sides of the duality. On the string theory, we only have this free parameter, which is the string coupling, GS. And that's related to the only parameter on the matrix model side, which is this Fermi energy, mu in this inverse way. You can fix this number here by comparing, for example, the perturbative scattering amplitudes. There is a Z2 symmetry, which just reflects the side of the potential, sends lambda to minus lambda. So the way this acts on the string theory is that it changes the sign of the space-time Ramon-Ramon field. So it takes the axion A to minus itself. In particular, what this means is that there are this left-moving and right-moving closed strings, which are linear combinations of tachyons and axions. And the left-moving closed string is given by this combination of tachyon and axion, and under the Z2, it maps to the right-moving combination of closed strings. Okay. And then this brings me to the last point, which is what is actually a closed string in the matrix quantum mechanics. So the picture is that, you know, a closed string is an excitation on the closed string vacuum, and that should be mapped to a particle hole pair. So here's the closed string vacuum. So if I want an excitation, I can excite a particle and create a hole. This has energy, let's say omega minus x. This has energy minus x. So all together, they form a closed string of energy omega. And now the picture is that this closed string moves towards the inverted quadratic potential. There it interacts, and then it can decompose into other particle hole pairs. And that's like a closed string coming from the weak coupling region, reaching the Liouville wall, interacting there, and then scattering into more closed strings that reach the outgoing, that reach the asymptotic region of weak coupling. Okay, so yeah, we can be more explicit about this. For example, a closed string of energy omega, you can write it in terms of a creation operator that creates a fermion with energy omega minus x above the Fermi C, and creates a hole with energy minus x below the Fermi C when acting on this matrix model closed string vacuum state. And then you have to sum here over all the such particle hole pairs with total energy omega. Okay. From this, you can easily extract the, for example, the simplest such scattering amplitude, which is just a one-to-one scattering amplitude for a closed string that come or a particle hole pair that comes from the right and goes to the right. So that's the 1R going to 1R. There's, of course, an overall energy conserving delta function. And in this case, you just get the reflection coefficient of the particle for reflecting off the quadratic potential and the reflection coefficient for the hole for reflecting off the quadratic potential. Okay, so in this picture above here, it's like as if the particle came and reflected and the hole also came and reflected. But I just want to emphasize that this formula is, you know, it's exact, okay? So there are no approximations done here because the free fermion Hamiltonian is known exactly. The reflection coefficient is given by this formula. So I just plug this in here and the corresponding formula for the hole, which is, you know, the hole is RP star. And then I can just expand in large mu, which is the GS expansion, the string coupling expansion. And I recover the exact formulas. Oh yeah, I actually wrote this. So the 1R going to 1R scattering amplitude. Okay, I have here the reflection coefficient of the particle and of the hole. So I plug this formula here. Okay. Here I've extracted this overall factor here that appears in the square root for both the particle and here for the hole. And then this function k is what comes from this ratio of gamma functions. Okay. So if I expand a large mu, so recall that large mu corresponds to the small string coupling expansion. Okay. The perturbative expansion in 1 over mu is going to give me the perturbative expansion in the string coupling. Okay. So these are the contributions that I'd use to get the scattering amplitudes that I described before from the sphere and from the torus and genus 2 and so on. Okay. And note that all of these are coming from this function k, because this prefactor here is always comes with e to the minus 2 pi mu, which is non-perturbative in the string couple. Okay, but we know that this contributions are there, this e to the minus 2 pi mu. So this gives rise to the second set of contributions here, which are non-perturbative. Okay, so they come in powers of e to the minus 2 pi mu to some power. And then on top of that, there's an expansion in 1 over mu. So you can think of this as some open string loop expansion on top of each instanton saddle. Okay. From the matrix model, this is very clear because these non-perturbative corrections come from fermions tunneling under the potential. Okay, this first contribution is just reflection where the inverted quadratic potential touches the Fermi C. And these other contributions, the second set, come from tunneling of these fermions and holes, I should say. So these are non-perturbative. Okay, great. But now we know that these non-perturbative contributions are there. And so we'd like to know if there's a world sheet formalism for computing these contributions. If the duality is true, then we should be able to find them just in the string theory as well. And that's what I wanted to describe next. Are there any questions about what's been said so far? Okay, great. So let's move on to non-perturbative effects. Like I said, the matrix quantum mechanics result is exact. Okay, so here now I'm computing an amplitude where the particle and hole tunnel to the other side. So 1R goes to 1 left. So in this case, I just replaced the reflection coefficients above by transmission coefficients like this. And there we also know the expressions for this coefficients, and you just get something like sinh 2 pi omega is the minus 2 pi mu at leading order. And then you have 1 over mu corrections, and the corrections of the form, the minus 4 pi mu. But this is the leading order computation that I'd like to reproduce from the worksheet. Okay. Okay, and another thing I should say is that so far I've been saying this is the matrix model dual of this type 0B string theory, but in fact, if all I know is about perturbative amplitudes, then I actually don't really know that this potential for the fermions is actually the one I mentioned. Because, for example, all these potentials that I drew here, they would give rise to the same perturbative scattering amplitudes, but they differ at the non-perturbative level, okay? So if you want, the logic should be that I can compute some non-perturbative amplitudes at the worksheet, and that will tell me what the matrix quantum mechanics dual of the string theory is. But of course, at the end of the day, we expect this first one to be the simplest one, which is the one that we're going to be trying to reproduce from the worksheet. But like I say here, this should be a test of the duality beyond perturbation theory. Okay, so let's now move on to describe the worksheet story of this non-perturbative effect. Okay, the intuition comes basically from QFT, where non-perturbative effects are mediated by instantons, so which are Euclidean solutions that are localized in space-time. Okay, so they break all translation invariants, and then what you do is compute some scattering amplitude around these classical solutions and integrate over the collective coordinates of these instantons. So we're interested in some string theory analog of this. So we're also interested in Euclidean solutions that are localized in space-time. Furthermore, the matrix model suggests that the action should be of order 1 over GS. And so the very natural proposal is that these are the so-called D instantons, okay? So D instantons are, you can think of as just D brains that are localized in every direction in target space. For example, if I was doing a, 10-dimensional type 2B string theory, I would just have all my target space, free fields X mu to have Dirichlet boundary conditions. Okay, this will define some boundary condition in the string theory, which is the D instanton of 10-dimensional type 2B string theory. For the type 0B, it's a similar story. The X0 has Dirichlet boundary condition. And the Liouville has the so-called ZZ 1,1 boundary condition, okay? I'll describe what this is shortly, but basically the picture to have is that you have closed string, say one closed string coming from the weak coupling region. At some point in time, it finds a D instanton, which I'll call D sub X. And then there it scatters and produces a outgoing closed string. Let's say T omega one minus, like this. So this is at a given time. And so this is like the space-time picture of this one-to-one scattering being mediated by a D instanton at time X. Okay. Okay. And the whole formalism for computing this from the worksheet was described in this 94 paper by Puchinski. So let me describe the idea, because again, this is something that's very general that you could apply to kind of any worksheet string theory that you have. Okay, I'm gonna be focusing on the type 0B, but no matter what worksheet string theory you have, it's pretty easy to identify the boundary states that give D instanton corrections. And then you can repeat the same analysis there. Okay, so what's the logic? So usually when you compute some scattering amplitude of closed strings, you consider some worksheet diagrams like a sphere or torus and so on, but you only talk about a single such worksheet diagram, right? So you don't consider, for example, product of two spheres or a sphere and a torus. And the reason is because each of these diagrams would come with a delta function. So it'd give rise to a disconnect contribution to the scattering amplitude. Here for the instantons, I'm completely breaking all translation invariants. So I'm allowed to include disconnected diagrams. So in particular, I should include any disconnected diagrams of like empty diagrams. And these are just going to sum and exponentiate. So I'm going to have an overall factor that gives the exponential of the disk, then I have the exponential of the annulus, a disk with two holes, and so on. Okay. If I'm focused at leading order NGS, okay, then I know that the disk goes of order one over GS. The annulus is order one. These guys are order GS. So I'm just going to drop these ones and the subleading ones. Okay. This one over GS is good because it's like giving the instanton action. Okay. It's of order e to the one over GS. The one is just some overall normalization. Okay, and now I need to insert my closed strings. So again, if I'm interested in leading order in GS, you can convince yourself that the leading diagram just comes from two disconnected disks, each with a closed string insertion. This is the boundary DX. The boundary condition is DX on both. And then there is, well, this is general, so I'm not going to write the vertex operator, but it's like this. And finally, at the end of the day, you integrate over the collective coordinates, and this restores translation invariance. Okay, so I get, in the end, an overall delta function that imposes energy conservation as you'd want for a scattering amplitude. So it's a very simple formalism. Okay, so let's now go on and apply this to the type 0b case. So all I need is the instanton boundary state or the boundary structure constants, if you want. So this is denoted by this ZZ1,1 boundary state here. There's an expansion in terms of the NSNS and the Ramond-Ramond sectors. So there's some coefficients psi NS and psi R. This double cat notation means that it's an Ishibashi state, which just means that it's a linear combination of the Liouville primary and its super zeros are descendants in such a way that it's consistent with the conformal inference. This is not too important. Okay, but essentially the main punchline of this expansion is that the disk one point you can extract from this coefficient psi ns or from psi r, okay, depending on whether it's a ns closed string insertion or Ramond-Ramond closed string insertion. There's also a ZZ bar boundary state, which just comes from flipping the sign of the Ramond-Ramond sector contribution, which is related to the Z2 symmetry that I mentioned above. The interpretation of this is that, you know, on the matrix model side, is that if I have a particle hole pair, I can have either the particle tunneling, and that's going to be mediated by a D instanton, and here the hole reflects, or I can have a process where the hole is going to tunnel, and the particle is going to reflect, and that should be mediated by the D bar. Okay. Okay. So let's now describe the modular bootstrap, how to calculate this coefficient psi ns and psi r. This was done in these sets of papers by this gentleman.
So I have a question. So yeah. I guess you're not summing over the other ZZ brains?
Yeah, I'm only considering the leading non-perturbative contribution, which comes from
the... So would the matrix model doing some kind of expansion see the other ones or not?
Yeah. So let me go back up. Yeah, here. So there's the sum over N here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the leading order contribution, the N equals 1, only knows about the 1,1. But in general, if you want to consider, you know, n equals 2, n equals 4 terms in this expansion, then you need to sum over higher and higher order.
Yeah. Okay. And you won't be doing that.
I won't be doing that. Okay. This was done in, by the way, we did in a previous, in the C equals 1 string theory case. Mm-hmm. And that was the, you know, the bosonic version of all these statements. And there we showed that indeed to basically all orders in n, at leading order in the OpenString expansion. It reproduced between the matrix model and the worksheet exactly the, you know, the scattering amplitudes precisely match. Mm-hmm. And you need to include indeed all the higher ZZ instances.
Makes sense. Yeah, thanks.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, so here I'll be talking about the leading contribution, which just comes from the ZZ1.1 instanton. So we're going to fix this coefficient psi ns and psi r by doing what's called modular bootstrap. So the idea is that we consider the Liouville CFT on an interval where on each side we have the ZZ1.1 boundary condition. Now, if I think of time as propagating, you know, around the cylinder in this vertical direction, then this is essentially the partition function for the boundary operators between this ZZ1.1 boundary condition, or what I call the open string partition function. So this is just given by the trace over the open string Hilbert space. There's this insertion of Q, which is just e to the minus 2 pi t. 2 pi t is like the length around the cylinder. This is like the e to the minus beta h that insert in the partition function. And there's this factor which just comes from the GSO projection of the worksheet string theory. The f is the total fermion number. It's not super important. But the main point of this calculation is that this allows us to define the ZZ1.1 boundary condition as the boundary condition that has, as in the open string Hilbert space, only the identity operator together with the Virzoro descendants. Okay. So, you know, this partition function is essentially defined by the second line. And then when I perform the sum, I just obtain this expression where the theta functions come from the super Virzoro descendants. So that's the open string interpretation. But I can also, you know, rescale the cylinder such that the length around the cylinder is 2 pi. And now I can think of this as a ZZ1.1 boundary state. Let's say on this side, it emits a closed string, it propagates for a finite amount of time, and then it's absorbed by a ZZ boundary state on the other side. So then I compute this partition function in this way. I have the ZZ boundary state insertion. I have this Q prime insertion, which is just the propagation for a finite amount of time. So this Q prime Z to the minus 2 pi over T. And then I write with the ZZ boundary state on the other side. So, you know, if I use the expressions for the ZZ boundary state above, I just get the psi ns and psi r coefficient squared. And then there's this contribution, which comes from, you know, the propagation of the closed string together with all its super Virzoro descendants. This is the super Virzoro character. I wrote it here, what it is in each case for the Ramond-Ramond and the NSNS closed strings. And because of these modular properties of this theta functions, you can go and read off that the two expressions, both the open string and the closed string expressions match, provided that this psi ns and psi r are given by these values, by these expressions. So from this modular bootstrap approach, you can read off what they are, which is great because now we can compute the disk one-point function that entered in the instanton formalism. You know, here I have, for example, a tachyon insertion with the d instanton at position x. I have this overall collective coordinate dependence, and then I just multiply by the psi ns. And there's a similar expression for the axion where I just replace the psi ns by psi r. Okay. Right. And again, the process I'm interested in is going to be one where I have a particle and a hole coming from the right, and they just transmit to the other side. So it's a one right going to one left process. And for that to happen, I need both the particle and the hole to tunnel, which according to the interpretation above comes from a DD bar pair. Okay, so a particle, for a D instanton and a debar instanton together. Okay, so let's now, so now let's describe the formalism, the general formalism that I described above for the context of this one R going to one left process. So I have two D instantons, one D and one D bar. So exponentiating the empty diagrams just gives me the sum over the two empty disks. I can also have empty annuli with boundaries on the same D instanton or boundaries like this one, or I can have boundaries on different D instantons. So for example, this one, okay? Let me move this a bit. Okay. I also have the closed string insertions come from disconnected disk one point functions. So I can something like this, where on the first case I have a D1 boundary condition. On the second case, I have D2 bar. And I can have the same thing for the other closed string. D1. Okay. And at the end, I integrate over the collective coordinates, one for each D instanton. Okay. And according to my, just to be extra precise, this should be an R omega plus, R omega plus. So that's an incoming closed string from the right. And this should be a left moving closed string, if there's subindex one on the left, and an outgoing closed string on the left. Okay. So this was the general formalism that was developed in this bosonic two-dimensional string theory by me and my collaborators. Okay, so the space-time picture of this, again, is that you have a closed string, let's say, in this case, a right-moving closed string, emits a d-instanton at position d1, then the annulus gives interactions between the d-instanton at position 1 and the d-bar instanton at position 2, so something like this. I have arbitrarily many of these legs. And then you have an outgoing closed string of the other D2 bar instanton. This is the contribution that comes from, for example, this diagram times this diagram. Okay, where the closed string R omega plus is absorbed by D1 and the closed string L omega 1 minus is emitted by D2 bar. There would also be contributions, for example, of this form, R omega plus D1 L omega 1 minus. So we have the same interaction between the instantons. But this one would come, for example, from this disk diagram and this disk diagram. So both ingoing and outgoing closed strings are emitted by the D1 instanton. Okay. Okay. So this disk one points we have computed above. So the only thing that I actually haven't told you how to compute is this annulus diagram between the two D instantons. It's a very similar expression to the one we had before. This Q's essentially come from the open string partition function. The theta functions all cancel out between the matter and ghost sector. There's only a contribution from the fact that the D instantons are not at the same position, so the open strings are stretched. And at the end of the day, you find an expression that you can integrate, and it just looks like this. Okay. So the C is some constant that cannot be fixed from the world sheet formalism, but it's independent of X. Okay, so now I can exponentiate two of these annuli, because that's what enters in the string theory calculation. And I just get a measure factor in the relative position of the two D instantons. You can see that there is a pole when the relative position of the instantons is 2 pi, plus or minus 2 pi. And this comes from the fact that the tachyonic open string that's stretched between the D1 and D2 bar is becoming massless at that point. So, you know, you need some prescription for dealing with these poles. And it turns out that the correct prescription is a principal value prescription. And this was shown to be the prescription to be consistent with the unitarity. Okay, so just shown by using string field theory by Sen. The idea is that, you know, these diagrams, space-time diagrams that I drew here, if you cut them, for example, here, they should admit, they should satisfy the usual unitarity cutting rules. And this is shown to be true only if you choose this principal value prescription. Okay, great. So now we put everything together and you arrive at this very simple expression. You have this integral over the relative position. Here I've replaced already the disk one point functions that we calculated above. I performed the integral over the overall center of mass position of the D instantons. And this e to the minus 2 pi mu came from the empty disks, exponentiated empty disks. So, okay, so you can just go ahead and perform this integral in the principal value contour, and you get this answer. And this is all in a Euclidean space. So you do a weak rotation like this, and you arrive at this final answer, which agrees precisely with the matrix model results that I described above. So, you know, this is very nice evidence that, you know, this duality actually holds beyond perturbation theory. In fact, we have gone and computed the one R going to K closed strings on the left, and it precisely matches the matrix quantum mechanics as well. So all the scattering amplitudes in this computed in this way exactly match between the two sides, and it's a very nice check that everything is consistent. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to conclude with some open questions and future directions. So like we already was already asked, one thing that'd be nice to do is to extend this to higher orders. And then there are many different contributions we have to include. For example, we have to consider multi D instantons. So you can have many D instantons of the same kind, for example, D1, D2, etc., all of 1,1 type. But you can also have contributions which are of higher D instantons, because in general, Liouville admits ZZ M, N boundary conditions, whose action is of higher order. So there are both contributions from multi D instantons and also contributions from single D instantons, but higher order in the non-perturbative expansion, which are given by a different boundary state. But like I said, this was done in the bosonic string theory, two-dimensional string theory, so presumably can also be repeated here. There's another issue which has to do with the charge sectors, because so far I've described this scattering amplitude where both the particle and the whole tunnel, but you can also imagine a scattering amplitude where just the particle tunnels to the other side, but the whole reflects. And what happens in this case is that, you know, the number of fermions on the right and on the left is not the same in the beginning and in the end. So these processes are a bit more subtle because essentially they're zero in the continuum limit. The reason being that there's a unique particle hole configuration for which the process doesn't vanish on the matrix model side. So you have to introduce some sort of IR cutoff to calculate them. And we're currently doing that in the worksheet by doing a finite temperature calculation. But I didn't want to introduce all these concepts here today. Okay. Like I said, you can also generalize this to other models. So for example, other two-dimensional string theories like type 0A or heterotic SO23. This one has a dual matrix quantum mechanics. So you can go on and check against the matrix model there. That'd be a nice consistency check. The heterotic SO23 does not have it, but maybe this could also provide some hints as to what this dual is. And finally, let me comment on this work to appear with the, this is with Nathan Agmon, Min-Jae Cho, Victor Rodriguez, and Sheehan, where you compute non-perturbative contributions to scattering amplitudes of gravitons in 10-dimensional type 2B. So you can think of this as being described by some low energy effective action, which at leading order is the Einstein-Hilbert action. And then there's some R to the four correction, some D to the four, R to the four, D to the six, R to the four, D to the eight, R to the four, and so on. Where the coefficients here are functions of the complexified coupling of type 2B. So this is a function tau, F0, F4, F6, F8. So these constants are all known. Well, not, sorry. These first three constants, functions of tau and tau bar are known because they're completely fixed by supersymmetry and SL2Z duality. Okay. But these higher order ones are not known. And what we have done is computed the scattering amplitude of four massless gravitons, okay, mediated by a D instanton in type 2B. So this is at order e to the 2 pi I tau. And we have precisely reproduced the dependence for this first three. That's expected. And we also have been able to compute all these higher order ones. Okay. So you know you can compute the arbitrarily many higher orders at this order in the non-perturbative tau expansion. Okay, so yeah, this is a very nice formalism that can be extended to many other string models, and there are many other applications. So I'll leave it here and ask if there are any more questions.
Thank you very much for the very interesting talk. Are there more questions for Bruno?
I mean, just a comment. I mean, there are like similar models of 0A and 0B in low dimensions that with unoriented strings that have known matrix model duals. So I guess there you could also do something like this, but also include open string amplitudes.
Mm-hmm. You mean in this lower dimensional models, or because also in
Well, I mean, you can do it also. The 0A, 0B only really makes sense in two dimensions. Mm-hmm. So I'm just talking about 0A, 0B with unoriented world sheets. Mm-hmm. They have nice matrix models also.
I see. Yeah, okay, so you say this list continues.
Yeah. But there is something qualitatively new that you have to understand how to include unoriented surfaces.
Ah, I see. Right, so yeah, in this formalism you say you also have to exponentiate empty, I guess, unoriented surfaces. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be nice to understand. Thanks.
Okay, any more questions?
Excuse me, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Sorry. One moment. You have my voice? Can I ask a question? Excuse me.
Yeah.
I have an elementary question, about your talk about supersymmetry string and about the dimension in the string. When you open any book in string theory or in supersymmetry, the first assumption about the string is this. You have a Lorentz symmetry, and you are assuming that Lorentz symmetry is valid for string or supersymmetry. Is there any experiment or any mathematical reason for this?
Sorry, I did. You assume what is Lorentz?
Is there any reason for Lorentz assuming Lorentz symmetry for a string theory?
Well, I think it's you know, at least in four dimensions we expect it to be four of these dimensions to be Lorentz invariant, because that's
four dimensions. You have Lorentz symmetry, and you have examined that, but for higher dimensions, we have no experiment for Lorentz symmetry.
Well, I mean, people talk about this, you know, R to the 4 cross Calabi-Yau's, right? The Calabi-Yau's don't have Lorentz symmetry. And there you only have Lorentz symmetry in the four dimensions because we expect that in the real world. But yeah, I think you have Lorentz symmetry in 10 dimensions is more start with a simple case and of 10 free bosons in some sense. But I agree with you that the other six dimensions, there's no experiment from the real world that to expect it to be.
There's no experiment, yeah. It is only a mathematical assumptions about a string theory or space symmetry.
Sorry, can you say that again?
It is only a mathematical assumption, not experiments.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I mean, most of string theory, I think, is a mathematical assumption. Or...
And is there any possibility to have an non-Lorentz invariant square symmetry or string theory?
Well, there is these examples of Calabi-Yau manifolds, six real dimensional Calabi-Yau manifolds.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bruno, again for the very interesting talk.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me.